Chapter 22. I waited until the pre-dawn gloom had become full, dismal, rainy morning to leave Chateau Wraith. Thomas helped me pull a few things together while I waited, and I borrowed a phone to make some calls. After that, the puppy and I got back in the Beetle, hit the drive-thru at McDonald's, and puttered back home to my apartment. I got out of the car and noticed a couple of blackened spots on the ground. I frowned and looked closer, discovering that they were in a methodical pattern. Someone had been trying to force their way past my wards, the magical protections I'd set up around the boarding house. They hadn't broken through them, but the fact that someone or something had tried made me more than a little uncomfortable. I got the shield bracelet ready to go as I went down the stairs, just in case, but nothing frustrated from fruitless attempts to break in was waiting for me. Mister appeared from under my landlady's car and followed me down the stairs. I got into my apartment fast and shut the door behind me. I muttered a spell that lit half a dozen candles around the room and braced myself for Mister's greeting. He made his usual attempt to bulldoze my legs out from under me with his shoulders. I put the puppy on the floor, where he panted happily at Mister, wagging his tail by way of friendly greeting. Mister did not look impressed. I kept moving, trying to stay focused. I didn't think I had any time to waste. I shoved aside the rugs over the stepladder, down to the lab, hauled the door open, and slid down into the lab. "Bob," I said, "what'd you find out?" Mister padded over to the top of the stairs. A cloud of flickering orange lights arose from the cat and flowed down the stepladder to the lab. The lights streamed over to the skull on its shelf, and Bob's eye sockets flickered to life. "It was a long, cold night," he said. "Saw a place where a couple of ghouls set up shop, out by the airport."
"Did you find Mavra?"
"You know, Harry, the Black Court has become awfully cagey about picking a base of operations of late."
"Did you find Mavra?"
"They've had centuries of experience," Bob said. "And Chicago is huge. It's like trying to find a needle in a cliché."
I gave the skull a flat look and said in a flat voice, "Bob, you're the only one in 1,000 miles who could have found them. You are an invaluable asset and ally whose knowledge is matched only by your willingness to give yourself to others. There, ego stroked.
Did you find Mavra?"
Bob scowled.
"You take all the fun out of getting complimented. Did you know that?"
He muttered something under his breath, mainly in Chinese, I think.
"Not yet."
"What?" I demanded.
"I've narrowed it down," Bob said.
"How narrow?"
The skull said, "it isn't in any of the strip clubs."
"Bob," I demanded, "you were running around strip joints all day?"
"I was only thinking of you, Harry," Bob said.
"What?"
"Well, a lot of the people on the set of that movie do some erotic dancing as a sideline, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, your bad guy wasn't going to take a night off to kill some locals as a warm-up."
Bob coughed.
"See?"
I narrowed my eyes and took deep breaths. It didn't really stop my anger from rising, but it made it happen a little more smoothly.
And you will be glad to know that every exotic dancer in Chicago is alive and well, safeguarded by your friendly neighborhood air spirit," Bob said.
Say, Harry, that is quite the homicidal gleam in your eye." I took off my coat and looked around the lab until I located my claw hammer. I picked it up. Bob's voice gained a hurried, stammering edge.
"And while I know that wasn't exactly the mission you sent me out on, you have to admit that it was really quite a noble purpose that totally supported your quest to preserve life."
I took a practice swing with the hammer. I took my duster off, folded it, laid it over the table, and tried again. Much better. I fixed a murderous gaze on the skull on the shelf.
Harry, Bob said, I was just doing the best job I could. The best job I could.
Bob, I said in a very reasonable tone of voice, I don't need to know about strippers. I need to know about Mavra.
Well, yes, of course, boss.
So I noticed that you're holding that hammer, and that your knuckles are turning kind of white there, and that you look sort of tense.
Don't worry, I said. I'm going to feel a lot better in a minute.
Ha! Bob said in a nervous, false laugh.
Ha ha! Ha!
That's funny, Harry.
I raised the hammer. Bob, I said, get your ethereal ass out of that skull and back into Mister, and you get out on the street and find Mavra before high noon, or I'm going to smash your skull into freaking powder.
But I'm tired, and it's raining, and I don't know if...
I raised the hammer and took a step forward.
Ack!
Bob choked. The cloud of orange lights spilled out of the skull in a hurried rush and zipped back up the stairs. I followed them and saw the last few sparkles around Mister's ears as Bob took possession of the cat again. I opened the door and the big Tom bounded out into the morning. I slammed the door, scowling. My thoughts were in a boiling turmoil beneath a fairly calm surface. I felt something I hadn't before, a sort of bitter taste in my mouth that took occasional side trips down to my stomach. Anger and fear were things I knew. They were emotions that had often saved my life. But this sensation was different. Something like my concern for Mister when I sent him out with Bob, but quieter, more haunting, and it didn't fade from one minute to the next. I think maybe it was about Thomas. Before that morning, there had been no one in my life except a few truly hardcore friends, some familiar professional associates, my cat, and one or two dedicated enemies who visited at least as often as my friends. But now I had a brother. Kinfolk, as old Ebenezer would say. And it changed things. I was used to watching out for myself. Not that my friends never did anything for me, but with respect to the day-to-day problems of life, I operated solo, except for a herd of depressing thoughts for company. I thought about how I already had a grave, complete with a white marble headstone, waiting for me at Graceland Cemetery, courtesy of an enemy now dead, but no less ready to receive me. I thought about how my utter ineptitude at romance was probably going to preserve my bachelor status for the next several decades. I thought about how many bad guys out there would be glad to take me out, and how it might take people weeks to realize I'd vanished. And I thought about growing old. Alone. It was not unusual for a wizard to live more than 3 centuries, but that wouldn't stop time from taking its toll. Sooner or later, I'd be old and frail, maybe even tired of living, and dying. I would have no one to share it with me, or hold my hand when I was afraid. In some simple, unexplainable, and utterly irrational way, Thomas's presence had altered that. His blood was in common with my own, and knowing it had created a strong emotional bond like nothing I had felt before. My heart sped a little bit out of sheer happiness at the thought. But no matter how happy discovering a brother made me, I would be a fool if I didn't realize another, darker side to the situation. After a lifetime alone, I had a brother. And I could lose him. The bitter sensation intensified at the thought, and I knew what it felt like to worry for family. I shut the door to the lab and covered it with its rug. I fumbled through my little pantry until I found my bottle of aspirin. The puppy followed me closely and attacked my shoelaces when I stopped. I opened the bottle, chewed 3 aspirin up, and swallowed them. No drink. I hear that's a bad sign when you can do medication like that. I grimaced, rubbing at my head again, and tried to quiet the tide of emotion running around my nervous system. There were things I had to do, and I would need my mind to be ordered if I wanted to survive them. First things first, I checked my problem inventory. Multiple injuries, including a vicious headache from where Inari had socked me. On one side of me lurked a mysterious wielder of a sloppy but lethal curse. On the other side, a homicidal vampire and her crew of killers. And, lest I forget,
Somewhere behind me was a cold, distant mercenary who was going to kill me if I didn't pay his fee. And I had no idea where I would come up with the cash. What a mess. And it wasn't yet mid-morning. And I was only growing more tired and beat up as the day went by. That meant that my smartest option was to attack the problem with a frontal assault with no delay while my head was relatively clear. I had to get moving before the bad guys got organized and came at me again. Damn. If only I knew where I needed to move. And if only I didn't have a sinking feeling that it might already be too late.